Welcome to the podcast. This podcast is going to be entitled something like How to Convince People and Be Nice About It. So I can't think of a good title yet for that. And it kind of meanders a little bit. You'll see how it kind of ties in. I have to admit, I'm not very good at this. I think I can explain things, sometimes not very well. Sometimes I haven't thought it through all the way through when I'm trying to explain it. But I also, I'm not the best at, I don't know if wooing is the right word, or not placating either, because that's kind of like patting someone on the head, I feel like. But convincing somebody by not telling them they're an idiot. Or not saying, see how stupid you are, see how wrong you are, right? That's really difficult to do, to tell somebody, hey, think about it a different way. Think about it like this. And we don't do that in politics. People don't really try to do that. They just want to fight. I feel like there is kind of a growing movement, a kind of backlash against that. You can kind of see that on the Joe Rogan, his experience as a podcaster. He'll kind of just be like, hey, what about this? What about that? You know, if he disagrees with somebody, he'll get, you know, but that he has kind of this ethos of, hey, let's just figure it out together. And people are sick of the Fox News talking heads, you know, Hannity and Combs. Well, you're an idiot because of this. Oh, yeah, well, you're an idiot because of this. That's annoying, and everyone's sick of it. And one of the problems is if you're talking to someone directly, if you're having just kind of a laid-back conversation, that's fine. But if you're having kind of a heated conversation, and especially if it's in front of other people, it usually just turns into like tit-for-tat, like point-for-point, like sparring, which I don't ever really see people's minds changing with sparring. It's just dumb. It's generally just dumb. It's just basically people fighting. Sometimes if you get a jocular person who can kind of roll with the punches and stuff and they're having fun with it, there's not a lot of people like that, come to find out. There's not a lot of people who want to just sit around and, what about this? Oh yeah, what about this? Most people don't want to do that. So if you're going to reach them, you have to be a little nicer about it. One of the best ways is through texting, or at least on like a chat type scenario, because you can think through exactly what you're going to say. In real time, it's much more difficult. That's why one of the dumbest things we do to elect a president is have real time debates. How often is that really what the president's doing? Okay, when they're negotiating with another leader. All right, that's something. What else? That's it. Everything else can be thought through methodically, and they have advisors. They think these things through. Go watch the movie 13 Days, right, about the Cuban Missile Crisis. They think things through. There isn't this, it like the presidency isn't a debate. It's like one of the dumbest things to be our main metric for picking who should be the president of the United States. It's stupid, because they can be like, you know, that thing where it's like, oh, I should have said that in the argument. That kind of thing is when the best thinking happens, when somebody contemplates it and they're like, yeah, but this is what I really meant to say. And we don't always get that. It's just like a blood sport. It's just stupid. You know, we all like to see the thug life sunglasses come down onto Ben Shapiro's face when he wrecks somebody or whatever. Yeah, that's true. But, you know, and his excuse is, if I make a fool out of the person in front of me, all the kids watching will agree with me. But did you really have like a thoughtful conversation with the other person? Or did you just pin them down rhetorically and be like, ha ha? What would that person say if they had some time to think through a thoughtful response? That's more powerful than just a bump, 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 and then the sunglasses come down. Because that's where we're at, and you don't really get a good conversation that way. And Ben Shapiro's not always right about everything. And so, or he needs to be more open-minded, and he could think, oh, what about this, you know? And so that's where we need to be. Look at Rand Paul. When he came into the Senate, he's a Republican, but when he came into the Senate, he started saying, look, we spend too much money on the defense budget, or there's a lot of waste in the defense budget. That's one of the right's sacred cows. I don't know if he's ever talked about taxes. That's another one of our sacred cows, is we will never raise taxes anywhere on anybody. It's like, all right, well, what if it's to, what if we could trade real cuts in waste and stupid spending for a wealth tax on rich people, or a moderate increase in the income tax on, you know, billionaires, on their personal wages, right, or whatever, however you term it, or an income tax on the, you know, people who get dividends, because it's income, let's get out, it's double tax. No, that's stupid, we all know that's stupid. I know there's like all this, you know, technical jargon they'll tell you. You put $10 million into an asset, it, whatever it did, it gave you money back. That's income. I'm sorry. I don't know the double, but I'm an owner and it was double taxed. And okay, maybe technically you're an owner, but you just put money in something and then it gave you money back and you did nothing except risk your money. Okay, that's income. Do people take a risk when they go get a job? Yeah, they might get hurt. They might lose their job. They don't have any other choice, right? They're not going to school while they're getting a job. They're not getting trained. I mean, maybe they're getting trained. But everything isn't the exact same, and it doesn't have to be. But the idea that somebody making 80 grand pays a higher income tax rate than Mitt Romney getting dividends, that's not okay. Sorry, it's not okay. If you want to figure out a different way to tax people, okay, we could talk about that. But look, that guy making 80 grand, he pays, well, anyway, we don't need to go down that road. But my point with that was Rand Paul brought up sacred cows that are on our side. And he has convinced a lot of people on our side in his way. And I think he's a good example. The Trump campaign, they're the first Republicans I ever heard talk about how illegal immigration is lowering wages. Not, oh, it's wrong, they shouldn't be here. Yeah, they're lowering the wages of working people. Republicans never talked about that before. I remember it was Mike Pence who said it first, and I'm like, why are Republicans talking about union laborers? The unions are the devil. Ah! Right? And yeah, unions are corrupt. I don't really like the unions. I like the idea of unions, but the unions have become corrupted. Just like the FBI, I like the idea of the FBI, but it's corrupt. So that's, I think, the thing we should be against with unions. But my entire lifetime, I was around Republicans who were like, no, the unions. The idea of a union is perfectly fine because labor abuses, or the other way around, capital abuses labor when they get the chance. They just do. So you don't know your history if you don't know that. You need to go learn about the progressive period in the late 1800s. And maybe I should learn an alternate history, and or not alternate, but a different view of the history. I don't know. Maybe you could make an argument that labor unions weren't needed, but I doubt it. So let me try to convince you of something that our side will call me a communist for saying. But the more I've thought about it, the more I think our side is wrong. Now, I don't think there is a necessarily a good prescription in law to solve this problem. I think it's a moral problem that people need to analyze and say, yeah, it shouldn't be like this. Or I shouldn't participate in this. Now that maybe that's kind of like hoping that people would give up slavery because it was wrong. So how that worked out. But, and I don't know how good I am at explaining this, but this is, I'm trying to use it as an example of a way to explain to people something that they're going to vehemently disagree at first. But I feel like if you absorb my argument, and maybe I'm wrong, and I'm not the best at explaining because I haven't thought it all the way through, but I've thought it pretty close to all the way through, I think. I know the other side of the arguments pretty well. So the Republican argument, it's kind of the Rhino argument today, but it's still there, okay? Is whatever's best for business is what's best for everybody. You're old school Republicans. Yeah, we need to get business formation. Whatever's best for business formation. And a rising tide lifts all boats. I mean, how many times have you heard that? And so the general feeling from that philosophy is people who don't make a lot of money, it's their fault. They should have done better. They should have gotten more educated. They should have improved their skills. They should have made their labor worth more. Okay, they could. There's also a idea out there on the right that the market will fix everything. The market's kind of the holy grail or our climate change, right? That it fixes everything. We apply all these moral aspects to the market as if it's kind of part of our political religion. That, oh, the market will save us. Kind of like communism on their side or socialism. The only solution for failing socialism is more socialism. They will never admit that, well, I guess socialism doesn't work as an economic system. It might work. Well, it depends on how you define socialism, but a welfare state might work, but a managed economy doesn't work. Sorry, we just have learned that. The government managing everything. It doesn't work. They tried it. It doesn't work. It's stupid. And it makes sense that it doesn't work if you think about it. But on our side, the only solution for, you know, the market failing is more market, more freedom, right? Look, I like freedom. I don't like government control. I don't like a ton of overly onerous regulations. Do I need to say overly in front of onerous? I don't know. But if you don't have them, you have things like slavery, right? You have things like people working in mines that aren't safe. Like, just picture the Industrial Revolution. People working in factories for peanuts, child labor, all these kinds of things. Look at the... You know, this is so cliche now or overused. The cobalt mines. That's what the market gives you. And people will say, well, that's the natural course of the market. Over time, those people will get more rich and blah, blah, blah. In every case? I don't think so. If people are going to exploit other people, when will they stop? What's going to make them stop? The answer is competition will make them stop. Okay, but that's the government ensuring that there's competition. That's not a pure market. So you're like Hillary? You say the greatest threat to whatever is the unfettered free market? No, I don't think that's the greatest threat to freedom, but it's you need to fetter it or whatever you want to put it. You need to regulate it somehow. It's not the Holy Grail. It's not perfect. It has problems. Maybe I'm not doing the best at explaining this in a nice way. I don't know. So try this idea on for size. If you're getting rich off of someone else's labor, that's immoral. What do you think about that? Now notice I said getting rich. Now rich is a relative term. But I would say Jeff Bezos buying a $500 million yacht while his business pays people 12 bucks an hour to work their tails off in a warehouse. That's immoral. I know all the arguments. Believe me, I can hear Rush Limbaugh in my head. Yeah, but, you know, well, the market and a rising tide lifts all boats. And I know that. I know all those arguments. Just think about that. That he had accumulated all that money. And now his company is doing that to make money off of those laborers. I just think there should be an upper limit to where people say, am I just getting lucky or is this ill-gotten wealth? Did I really earn this? That never seems to be the question. Do I deserve this? Did I work for this? The only thing that they question is, did I start a business? And then that's it. Everything from then on out is fine. Because I worked really hard at the beginning to start the business for like a year. Okay. Maybe you worked hard for a long time. Did you work as hard as the guy down the street who owns a restaurant? No, but it's a different kind of business, see? Okay, you're still not doing any work, though. And Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates and whoever are still making money. I guess, like, is it the rapper 50 Cent? I don't know who it was, Jay-Z. I don't know who it was. But he had a TV show. And then once the TV show got going, he just quit the TV show because he said, well, it's just running on its own now. I don't have to do anything. Okay, so you started it, and now people run it, and you make money. Doesn't that sound like a scam? Doesn't that sound like landed gentry in England who owned land? Because their parents at some point acquired it, and then they had tenant farmers who had no other choice but to work on that land and do sharecropping and pay them rent. And then those people had if you've watched Jane Austen, he makes $5,000 a year, or 5,000 pounds a year or whatever. What does he do? Gentlemen didn't do work. That was considered beneath them. The lower classes did work on their land because they owned the land. How is that different from the kids who inherited Walmart? How is it different? Their dad worked to start Walmart. And now they inherited Walmart, and they're in charge of Walmart. And yeah, I know they run the company, but they don't have to. They could just go live in Hawaii and sit on the beach, and still they own Walmart. And all those people who work in it work for them, and they make them a ton of money, and then they get the profits. How is it different? I mean, tell me. In that instance, and I know that I can hear the arguments. Yeah, but they created this thing. And okay. So what? I don't care what their dad created. They're doing no work and making money from other people working. That's not okay. I don't care what they own. It just that can't be right. Now you could say there's also an this is also a flexible, I don't know the word, but at some point it becomes wrong. Now if they just had a modest house and whatever, okay, it'd be more tolerable. But doing no labor and making money off of other people's labor, right? I'm not comparing it directly to slavery, but Abraham Lincoln said, slavery is the idea of you work, I eat. Okay, look at this one. Wages. Every time you hear people say, well, we can't pay more wages because then prices will go up. Is that the only, is that like an iron law of nature? Or is that just because you don't want your profits to go down? Technically, you could take less profits, right? You could. I mean, I'm not saying you should have to necessarily, but that's another mechanism that you could use to keep prices low while wages go up or while costs go up. Yeah. But the problem is the people who own those businesses, they created them to get rich. They didn't create them to like have a decent house and go on a vacation once a year. They own stock in the company to get rich. And by doing no work eventually. That's the goal. See, how many people would start a business if they knew they had to work as hard as their workers forever? I mean, I don't know, maybe some of them would. Okay. But the goal is, hey, I can get this thing and set it up and just put it on autopilot, baby. And the justification is, well, you didn't build it. That's true. And then their response is, well, go start your own business if you don't like working here. Can everyone start their own business? And get where would they get the employees? Now, I get it. There's risk involved. Some people are lazy. I get all those arguments. I'm talking philosophically. Because all those arguments obfuscate the real thing. And you know, maybe they don't totally. I understand that sometimes when you're arguing a philosophical point and somebody says, yeah, but in real life, it plays out like this. That's why your philosophical point is wrong. I understand that. And maybe I'm wrong. But trust me, I have heard these arguments. I agree with these arguments generally. But as I watch this happen, where people on my side justify paying illegal immigrants a lot less than they should, when they argue to lower teacher wages, when they argue to make fun of tradespeople and say, well, they should have gone to college, right? How many times have you heard that? Like, why are we doing that? Everyone should be a doctor or a lawyer or a business owner. That's kind of what it feels like. Then people will say, well, the trash man should have tried harder. Okay, well, couldn't you say that the lawyer should have tried harder? How come the lawyer's job makes a ton of money? But the trash man, just because of the market, that's what they'll say. Well, the market. Okay. What about the people digging cobalt in whatever it is? It used to be called Zaire, whatever it's called now. What they're doing is very valuable. Those people are turning around and selling those batteries and making a killing off of those people. So the market isn't working there. So what is it? It's who owns the mechanisms, right? And look, I know this sounds like a communist, but this was Marx's central point. Owning the mechanisms is what gives you the ability to make a ton of money. Not only that, I get it. There's expertise. It's very complicated. But think about that farmer who makes quite a bit of money. I don't think you can be a farmer anymore. I don't know a ton about it. But it doesn't seem like you can be a farmer and have like 50 acres and make a go of it. Unless it's just like your hobby or, you know, a part-time gig. These are huge businesses. And they want illegal immigrants to come in so they can, why? So they can pay them nothing. That's why. And the excuse is, right, this is what George W. Bush used to say, they're doing jobs that Americans won't do. Why won't they do them? There's Americans who aren't lazy because they don't get paid anything. So I used to say, yeah, they're doing jobs Americans won't do for nothing. You need to put that on the end. So the farmers justify it by saying, I don't mean to just pick on farmers, people who hire maids, people who hire illegal immigrants, because they're desperate. And they know that they can pay them less because they're desperate, because they're in this country without permission, and that they can get kicked out, so they'll just take whatever they can get. That's wrong. I'm sorry. And they'll say, well, they're making way more than they would make in El Salvador. So what? They're not in El Salvador. They're in America. And you're not supposed to pay people nothing in America just because you can get away with it. Look, I'm not saying making money is bad. I'm saying making billions in profit while you pay people peanuts is bad. That's what I'm saying. And people should have a moral sense of where that line is. But since they tether themselves to the market and they think the market is like our savior, then, well, the market will tell us what to pay them. And that's okay. It means it's okay because the market told me. What about your conscience? What does it tell you? But they don't have to consult their conscience because they consulted the market and their free market ideology. Okay. Let me just go through this little back and forth here that I thought up. If you go to, you know, the CEO of Disney or whatever and say, you make 500 times more than your laborers, their response is, well, the market pays people what their labor is worth. Well, how does it figure out what their labor is worth? Well, by what people are willing to pay them. So it's okay for you to pay them as little as you can get away with? Yes, because they can get a job somewhere else if they don't like working here, if they don't like the wage. And what guarantees that they'll be able to find another job? The market. There'll be competition. There'll be other jobs out there. So if everyone in the market who's hiring is interested in low wages, then why would wages ever go up? Because somebody will go and pay them more because they want them. Competition fixes that. And then wages will rise because employers will compete for laborers. So what if there's a surplus of laborers? Then that's the laborer's problem, not mine. He'll have to differentiate himself somehow and make his labor worth more. Well, how? Well, he can do something other than being a laborer. But you need laborers to make your business work. Well, yeah. So why don't you pay them more? Because I don't have to. Because the market doesn't make me. Well, why doesn't it? Because the market doesn't bear it. They're not competitive enough with their skills. So the only solution for higher wages is a low labor supply?
At least for low-skilled laborers, yeah.
Well, what if you had high-skill laborers? There are PhDs in India who are making peanuts. That doesn't actually apply. So here's the next one. And this is kind of provocative, but how is your situation different from a slave owner? Well, it's very different. I don't own them, of course. Okay, but you pay them next to nothing. Oh, yeah. So why? Because that's what their labor is worth. So it's okay for you to pay a laborer less than what a slave's expenses would cost for room and board? Yes, because the market dictates that that's what their labor is worth. How much money do you make off your business? Well, I make quite a bit of money. Why don't you pass that on to your laborers?
Well, I do in the form of wages.
What percent of what you profit off of this business do you think they get in wages?
Well, that's calculated into the business expenses.
I know that. But how much of what's left over, like what you take home, what percent of that do their wages add up to?
Well, we don't calculate it that way, but maybe 20% of what I get equals what the wages are for the company.
So you set up a business and it grows and then it employs people and they make a product and it produces a certain amount of wealth. And because you set up the enterprise and you own the enterprise, you get to keep 80% of the profits and all of your employees split basically 20% of the profits.
Yeah, but see, they didn't take the risks. They didn't think up the idea. They didn't go through all the hard work of starting the company and doing all the things that entrepreneurs do to start companies. They don't have the headaches of running the business.
Okay, do you run the business anymore?
Well, no, I hire managers to run the business.
So he does the job that you used to do?
Well, pretty much, yeah, the day-to-day, but he didn't go through the business of setting it up and starting it from scratch.
But you pretty much don't have to do any work anymore. You could go fishing or go to Hawaii, and the business would just keep running itself, right?
Well, yeah.
So how is that different from a slave plantation?
Well, if you want to measure it that way, every business is like a slave plantation in some way. Slave plantations were just like modern farms with captive labor. I mean, that's effectively what they were. The people couldn't leave. So that's not a fair comparison.
Okay, you're right. I'm not saying it's a totally fair comparison.
But I'm saying, how is it different? What does a business owner like you do to earn the money that you're getting?
Well, I made the business. That's what I did. I own it. And if people don't like it, they can go work at some other business. They don't want a job here.
So owning the business then is pretty much the key to making money in the United States.
Well, yeah, at least a lot of money, unless you're LeBron. Even then, you got to own the NBA to pay him.
So I just think that's sleazy at some point. Now, is the guy who has a decent house because he owns some construction company or some chain of restaurants or just, you know, some smallish business? No, I don't think that's sleazy. Generally, I think those people treat their employees pretty well. I feel like it's because they're closely connected to them. But, I don't know all about this. But I don't look at that person and be, he's exploiting his laborer that he pays 40 grand, right? Because that guy can't get foreign labor to build his widgets, right? He has to operate here. But then you get these big companies, and the moment that they can, they outsource everything, they exploit all the advantages that they can, and they just, you know, I just, Benedict, John Kerry called them Benedict Arnold companies that left their money overseas and all this. And a lot of that's just stupid political shell games. What, his wife is the owner of Kraft Heinz or whatever, it, you know, whatever it is. All the rich people just say these slogans and then they benefit from all this stuff. Just like Al Gore, right, making money off of climate change. This is a disgusting guy. But that's not really my point. I was like, oh, I sound like John Kerry. I can't believe it. But if you rig a system, people are going to take advantage of it. You know, just like that joke that, I can't remember that comedian who says, hey, when I knew Trump was serious, was the real deal, was when he said, look, I know the system's corrupt because I used it. I know the tax system is corrupt because I took advantage of it. Let's think about Andrew Carnegie for a minute. You know, he's a great man. I'm not trying to rip down Andrew Carnegie. He played a important role in American history. He built a kind of a steel empire and changed the world. We benefit from what he did. Okay? But let's think about just the business aspect, this aspect of him. In today's dollars, from what I could find out, I was talking to ChatGPT and kind of going round and round for a long time because it would give me wrong answers sometimes or whatever. I think this is pretty accurate, some of these numbers. So by at the height of his fortune, he had accumulated in today's dollars $300 billion worth of wealth. So where did all that value come from? Well, he set up a corporation. He took a risk. He managed the corporation. He thought things up that nobody else was thinking up. That's the entrepreneur in him, right? He built these huge factories. He kept them profitable. He was famously, I don't mean ruthless in a bad way, but ruthless in how he managed the factories to make sure they weren't losing any money. If there were inefficiencies in his factory, he would just tear them out and rebuild it. He was fanatical about having his factories be as efficient as he could. Okay? So, as far as that aspect of it, a manager, an entrepreneur, he's excellent at it. And he made a big difference. And so, how much is that worth? If you were going to hire an Andrew Carnegie, is that worth $300 billion in wages? Would anyone pay him $300 billion? I don't think so. They pay him well. Okay, they'd pay him what they pay, you know, super nerds at NASA or, you know, like LeBron, who has his own special set of skills. But $300 billion? I don't think you could get anyone to pay someone to do that. Or that you could pay someone to do what he did, but you couldn't pay him. No one would pay them $300 billion. So Carnegie paid his workers, looks like from what I could find out, $45 to $60 a day in today's dollars. And look, I'm recording this in, what is it, the end of April 2023. In 10 minutes with Biden's inflation, that, you know, today's dollars is relative. But anyway, just keep that in mind. Maybe in 6 months, it'll be the equivalent of $100 a day. I don't know. And then we'll all have our wonderful flying electric cars. And what is it Brian Suit says? And everything will be strawberry-scented welfare checks and unicorns. Anyway, back to this. And people generally work 10 to 12 hours a day and on Saturdays. So they were paid by the day, not hourly. And so let's assume they worked 300 days a year. So they would make basically 14 grand to 18 grand a year. Okay, that's not a lot. That's very, very poor.
not like Africa living in a hut poor. Nothing against people living in Africa in a hut. I'm just trying to differentiate, okay? But, you know, making that in the United States, you can't even, like, get by on that at all in the United States. So he's paying him kind of nothing. So how much was he profiting per year? Now, this is kind of not perfect, but at least during the last maybe 20 years, the last two-thirds of his business, or maybe half of his business, this is accurate, I would think. Because it's not like it took him forever to get rich. He just kept getting more and more rich. So he was profiting roughly $10 billion a year. Himself. That was what he was accumulating. It's $10 billion worth of whatever it was, I don't know, stocks, whatever, per year, at least for a while. Okay, and this would have happened towards the end. And I understand, it's not like someone who's paying him a wage. I get it. It was assets. It was this and that. Just go with me on the value aspect of it. So what if he doubled his wages for his workers? Doubled. That would cripple his company for sure. Right now, I'm not saying at the very beginning when he had nothing. I'm saying the second half when he's filthy rich, he's making a killing off of these steel mills. So what do you think? Would it cripple him? So from what I could figure out, he's paying basically $500 million a year in wages. So if he doubled that, he would have been out another $500 million a year in wages. So he would have only taken home $9 billion a year or $8 billion a year. It wouldn't have crippled his company, right? If he's scraping off the top over $5 billion a year, I think he could have doubled their wages. He could have tripled and quadrupled their wages. And his business would have still made a ton of money. Because if he's profiting that and pocketing that, and his company is becoming worth that, I know he wasn't pocketing it, but you get the point. There's that much value accumulating somewhere, and it's probably in stocks. And I get that that's not always liquid, but it can be turned into liquidity pretty quick. Yeah, I know you can't turn things into liquidity. You know what I mean. So think what a difference that would have made to those people's families, to the market, to what other companies. Because if that's the excuse, well, that's what the market pays a steel mill laborer. Well, Carnegie's paying them $100 a day, $150 a day. I guess I'll have to raise my wages, right? That's the argument. A rising tide lifts all boats, so who raises the tide? He could have raised the tide. People of conscience could have raised the tide. Now, here comes the Rush Limbaughs. Oh, people of conscience, don't say that. It's just business. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but it's wrong. It's wrong. You shouldn't make your decisions based on whether you can get away with something or not. And that's what the market gives you, is a moral out. The market doesn't fix every problem. The market's essential. I get it. I'm not advocating at all for a managed economy. What I'm saying is people should have a moral sense about how these things work. And they should be ashamed of themselves if they're living in the lap of luxury and their employees who are making that wealth for them are living like paupers. That cannot be right. Especially if you're somebody who claims that you have a conscience, claims that you're a good person. And the problem is they separate it. They say it's just business. That's how they justify it. Well, it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't. It shouldn't just be business. Just because you can get away with it doesn't mean you should do it. Okay, think about it this way. Somebody starts a business. Does this ever happen? That somebody gets filthy rich without employees? No, because they can't do all of that work. It's impossible. So yeah, are there some people, you know, you wrote a book,
you sing songs, you're LeBron. Okay, and see, those things still take a company. But let's say on the internet, you're a YouTuber and you made some, you know, great video. And you just, it's just you talking, you made $100 million off of that or something. Okay, I don't know how you exploited somebody for that. But if you start a company and you pay people nothing, and I mean, how much, think about it. How much do you think they market up when they take that cobalt? The products that they sell, it's insane. It's got to be, you know, thousands of percent, but they can get away with it. And I understand, like, the corporations don't have a lot of control over this. That's not necessarily my point. I'm saying, to the extent that they have control, they should stop justifying it by saying, well, things would cost more. No, you could just pocket less of the money. I'm sorry. That's stupid. You've been to a restaurant lately? Especially a restaurant that used to be kind of budget? Yeah, the prices have gone up by like 40%. Has the profits gone down by, you know, are they breaking even? This is all they can do to keep their people employed? No, get out of here. Companies are making profits still. They're making big profits. They just pass it on, and the excuse is, well, the market. I can't do anything about it. I operate in the market. You know, I keep going back to this because it's one of the only things that I know is the Costco guy, the guy who runs Costco. They pay their people well, and maybe it's purely a business decision. I don't know. But I lived in a place once where I didn't know this guy very well, but I knew who he was. And he had some job. I didn't really know what he did. And then I heard that he got a job at Costco, and I thought, dude, he's got like four kids. It's like working at Target. I guess not. He's a greeter, or not a greeter, but those people who sign your receipt at whatever it is, Costco. He still works there like 10 years later. It must be fine. It must be good enough. He couldn't do that if he was in Walmart unless he's a manager. I don't think they have managers at the door signing those sheets. Okay, that's what I'm talking about. The guy at Costco can't do all of those jobs. Winco is another example. I don't know if you have it where you are, but there's a grocery store that's great called Winco, and it's pretty big, and they have really cheap prices. And it's kind of weird because you can't use a credit card there, and you like bag your own groceries, and it's kind of weird. And they don't like stock the shelves, but they don't take them out individually. They just cut the top off the box and plop the box on the shelf. So, you know, there's kind of gimmicky stuff like that that is supposed to save them money. I don't know how much money it saves, but they're employee owned. And ChatGPT said, well, we don't know how much the owners or the higher-ups in the company, how much stock they own, because it's a private company. But the idea behind Winco is that the employees own it, and when the company does well, they do well. And think about that model. That wouldn't feel like you're exploiting workers. That feels like, oh, you're profiting from our labor. So are we. So here, maybe I talked about this before, but I think it's a good analogy. We have patent law in the United States. And that started, I don't know if it started with the Constitution or if it was just an idea floating around. I don't really know. But in our Constitution and during the constitutional period, yes, when some of our founders had slaves, I know. But there's still good things that they did. We put into law patents and copyrights so that it would encourage, we had to balance this. We had to encourage people to invent new things, but at the same time, let the rest of society benefit from those things that they invented. And so you invent something, you have the right to monopoly on that thing for whatever it is, 20 years max, and then everybody gets to make it. And you can still make it, but you don't have a monopoly on it. And so you're probably not going to make a ton of money making it anymore. but you don't get to keep it forever. So that's, now, you know, the analogy kind of breaks down because somebody else can build a company that does exactly what yours does, right? So it's not a perfect analogy, but just understand that idea. You could make the exact same argument for a patent and say, look, I invented it. It's mine. I own it. I put labor into it. Nobody else gets to make it but me, because that's not fair, because I put labor into it. You didn't think of it. Go think of your own invention if you don't like to pay the price for my invention. Why do you get to make it? I came up with it. I figured it out. It's kind of the same thing as a corporation. These corporations that exist forever, and the people that own them unless they want to sell, you know, stocks. But look, I think Bill Gates still has a controlling interest in Microsoft. It's still his company. But look at Elon. I don't know how he got all the financing, right? But he owns Twitter. And I don't know how SpaceX and whatever else he's involved with works, the boring tunneling company or whatever. But conceivably, he could own 100% of them if he started the business. You don't have to sell stocks. Or if you did sell stocks, you could just sell some, like 5% ownership in your company, whatever. And so think if somebody came along and said, okay, if you start a business, you own it for 30 years or until you die or something. And then when you die, all the employees own it or something, right? They have these, I was talking to ChatGPT, they have these things called ESOPs. I don't know exactly the acronym, but it's the idea behind Winco, that the employees own the company. Because I don't, just think about this idea too. You can take, go Google it. There's a company or a fund called GUT, G-U-T. It's the Guggenheim Utility Trust or something like that. I think that's the name. And what they do is they just buy utility company stocks. And they crank out 8% dividends a year. They've done it for 20 years. You put your money in, you get 8% out every year in monthly payments. They'll just cut you a check, dividends. And yeah, the price of the stock goes up and down. Not that much. It's usually $10 around there. They're constantly paying out money. So if you had $1 million, you could just put it in there. And they'd give you, what would they give you? It's not 80 grand. Is that 80 grand? Whatever it is, they give you a certain amount of money every year. And you don't do anything. Now you put your money up. You risk your money. That's true. You don't do any work. And so that's the problem, is there are people working at that business that make the money, that make the value. And all you're doing is applying your capital to buy into that thing that is making money. And how is it making money? By people working at it. And, you know, this isn't the best example because there's power plants, but there's still people making the power plants and running and maintaining the power plants. A better example is, you know, companies that have a lot of laborers and they don't get paid a lot. I mean, Walmart comes to mind. They don't get paid a lot. And the people who own stock are making money off of that. And the only response is, they should have gone to college. That really, that's the response? While you sit there and you make a ton of money, that's how you justify it in your mind? I mean, the Carnegie example is great because he still would have been filthy rich. What if he had only been worth $100 billion instead of $300 billion? But he raised the wage 3 times. Think what a story that would have been. We praise Henry Ford, and yes, I know he had some Nazi leanings. Okay, I'm not excusing that. Stop with that. Okay? Acting like that means he didn't do anything else that's good. Just stop. I guarantee you he wasn't for the concentration death camps. Get out of here. So anyway, he paid his people, I don't know, 50% more, not like two or three times more, but a significant amount more because he put his workers through a more rigorous process of that grueling assembly line. And we remember him as this innovator. He treated his people well, kind of like the Costco guy. So I don't know enough about the history of the auto industry to see it, to know if that trickled over to the other companies. But think what a hero he would be. Oh yeah, there were all these dirt poor people, and he made them not dirt poor. His business actually benefited the people who worked there and rewarded them for their labor more in accordance with what they produced. You know, free marketers will say, well, they didn't produce more than 18,000 grand in a year of value. Come on. I guarantee you they did. That's why he made so much money. Now, I know there's not a direct correlation. I think some Marxists go a little too far with all that, that whole idea that all the value, that there's no value in entrepreneurship, that there's no value in anything that the, quote, bourgeois class does. That's stupid. All I'm saying is, what did I say before? I'm not saying you can't get rich. I'm just saying I think it's immoral to get filthy rich while you pay people nothing. There should be some kind of, hey, I'm getting rich, you're going to get rich too. That should be the idea. Not that everyone has to be a partner with the owner, but this idea that because I own it, I get to screw you. Or I get to screw people who work for me effectively. And I get crazy rich. Where if you weren't working there, I wouldn't be making any money because the company would shut down. And the response to that is, well, I'll grab somebody else. Yeah, who's desperate. Right? Who's desperate? That's the point. It's wrong. It shouldn't be happening. So, I don't know if I did a very good job of trying to convince you in an uncranky way, but I think we should try to reach out to people from the other side as well as people on our own side about difficult topics and try to convince them instead of browbeating them. Thank you for listening.